Okay, so I will talk about patterns in thin plate elasticity. I will report on some experiments and studies that I have made with two collaborators, Benoît Roman during his PhD thesis, and Basile Odoli. Okay, so, well, the first question is why studying patterns in thin plate elasticity? Because there is a number of interesting issues. First, thin plates can exhibit a large variety of folded form. Just take an unconstrained plate and you see that you can easily monitor a number of forms, so you can anticipate that when we shall constrain such a plate, it will give us a large variety of patterns. In fact, as you know, elasticity does not involve characteristic scales, so we'll study patterns at a macroscopic scales, but these patterns will tell us also to those patterns that appear in biophysical scales or even in geophysical scales. Another important issue is that studying these patterns is not only an academic exercise, because these patterns can be linked to some important properties, transfer properties, because the exchange surface has increased, will increase, or to important functions, think about biophysical functions that can be linked to the geometry of membranes, for instance. Another interesting issue is that we know in these systems the elastic equations from centuries, but in fact we do not have equation for their geometry directly. So this geometry cannot be derived as solution of differential equations except in some simple cases when you have a weak folding, a small departure from the plane, very small departure, or in the absence of stress when you only have curvature. Otherwise, we don't have directly equation for this geometry, so we have to find other ways to understand these patterns. Okay, and then...
Do you go past the elastic limit?
No. All these talks, we will keep within the elastic limit and within the linear regime of elasticity. So there will be large non-linearities, but they will come from the geometry and not from elasticity itself. Okay, so the last issue is that this elastic deformation can be important in real life. If you are optimistic, the train has just passed. If you are pessimistic, it is going to pass.
Which direction is it going?
I don't know. So, Yes. No, I think it's heat. Yes. In regions where you have a large temperature difference, if you did not anticipate, provokes buckling.
I have a detour in East Germany after the frontier opened. So the rains were cracked.
Okay. So, just consider now a plate. We sometimes use transparencies and try to crush it between flat plates. This means that we take this sheet, we enclose it in a box, and we just reduce the height of the box and see what happens.
You clamp the ends.
Yes, the boundaries are clamped, and you only decreased the height of your box. So it's the height y here. Of course, an important issue is how do you clamp your sheet? So here you have a sheet that is clamped on two opposite sides, and it is seen from above. So you see a regular pattern. What is it? It's just folds that appear here. So you have six folds here. And here you have clamped on all sides here. And so you see a pattern with curved folds, defects here. And this is, as we well know, a consequence of competitive orientations due to clamping on different sides. So we will, in fact, begin by study this case, and then try to move to this one. But this is a much more difficult situation. Okay, so we'll be interested in the geometry, but also in the mechanical response of the systems. So here you have the setup in which we have studied these foldings. Here you can see the sheet. It is not compressed here, but then there will be air will come here and push this sheet onto the plate here, the above plate. So we'll encounter this situation, and we will reduce the height.
But there's no air. I don't understand. So it's pressurized actually underneath.
Yes, yes. Some pressure is going on from below. Here you have some motors which set the height, and so the bottom plate comes up to the height imposed by these motors. Yes, there is visual access here to see from above. Here you have the window here, which enables us to visualize the patterns. So
it's like a balloon. So what we see there is like a hemisphere or something that's blown off.
For the sheet. Yes, for the sheet, we have we make it just a buckle.
How do you do this without having a leak? You say there's pressure from the barrel.
Yes. Yes, but well, at the beginning, we clamped the sheet, as you can see here, with a distance between its sides, which is lower than its length. So it has to be buckled.
I understand. So if you only clamp it on two sides.
Yes, that's it.
So if the sheet is like this, and you say you put air pressure against the sheet.
Yeah.
How do you seal it against the side? How do you seal it here?
No, it's free. There it's free.
Oh, it's just free.
It's free
so
on this direction.
The air pressure,
no, the air pressure is just here to push the plate.
Oh, it just pushes the whole plate?
The
okay,
whole plate.
Okay, okay. Oh. I understand.
It's the whole plate.
Okay, I understand now. Okay. So it's really free.
Yes.
It's just a free sheet.
It's okay. So just a free sheet. Okay, so the control parameter is the height, and we measure the force, the reacting force of the sheet with gauge constraints, with gauge measurements, the constraints. Okay, so well,
we. Are the patterns reproducible?
Yes, mainly in this case. Yes, there are some somewhere then there are not, but for reasons we understand. So we use the steels for accuracy of the measurement, or polycarbonate shields, these ones, to better visualize. Okay, so Let's see now from the side, view from the side, and we start the crushing route by decreasing the height. So here is well the beginning. Well, the above plate just come in contact, so we have no force acting on the sheet and no reacting force, and we have a line contact between the sheet and the plate. When we decrease, when we compress, we then go to a planar contact here, and this planar contact buckles when we still reduce, giving rise to a free standing fold here. We compress again, this free standing fold grows and then reach the bottom here. So we have passed from one fold to two folds here. Then we continue to decrease the height, and the same story will resume. So we'll have here formation of planar contact, then buckling. Buckling, but buckling of one contact only. In fact, the most instable one. That will be, in fact, the largest one. And this freestanding fold, let's say here, will then grow and touch again the bottom. So we'll have three wrinkles, then four, five, and so on.
How high can you go before you get nonlinear? How high?
How high?
How many wrinkles can you actually get?
Oh, you can get many, many wrinkles. You can get 20, 25 if you want, without escaping the linear regime of elasticity. So
it depends on the history. If you keep the height fixed and you change the length,
oh, we didn't do that, but well, here we are in a simple situation. We could do that, and in fact we'll get a similar story, in fact. Because everything can be understood with respect to, of course, the height here, the length of the sheet, and the distance between
So it's equilibrium, there's no issue of time?
No, no,
no, no.
All these forms are steady, okay? And, well, they gradually form, but they are all steady. Okay, so now what is the mechanical response of this system? Oh no, just here I show you the view from above. So here you see that you have line contact and here you have planar contact. Okay, that's a reflection from above. Well, you see that these contacts have not equal length here. And this part of something we can determine. And it's a degree of freedom of the system. In fact, the total length of the planar contact are prescribed, but their distribution is free. So let's see the mechanical response of the systems. Here you have line contacts, planar contacts, freestanding fold. We begin here with the plate just in contact with the sheet. And you see here the, well, it's hard to, you see here the first history going from one fold to two folds. One fold here, then here from two to three, three to four, four to five, and so on. What you see is something strange. You see that the force the response of the shield, the sheet, vanishes repeatedly, repetitive vanishing here. You have a mean increase that is quite large, quite nonlinear. You see by going to five folds, you have increased the response by a factor of 50 here. And so you have a large fluctuation around the mean in this situation. So how can we understand this large response. This response tells us that, in fact, you have, of course, a lot of energy stored in the sheet, and that just by curvature you can express this energy. A simple sheet like that can, in fact, can be quite robust. Yes. This is just when the freestanding fold has grown and touched the bottom plate.
What's the magnitude of the force, roughly? Did you get? Hmm? The magnitude of the force for a polycarbonate film can't be very high, right?
Oh, for this, it will be 5 to 10 newtons, for instance. Okay. Yes. Okay, so to understand this, we go back to Euler, and in fact we are in a simple situation because we have a regular geometry, so we can study just a part of the sheet, just a section, and this is a section of the shield. Its mechanical equilibrium reduces to force equilibrium. Here P and Q are the component of the tension on the sheet, so the tension is constant, the form evolves, the tangent change, but not the tension. And then you can write the equilibrium of momentum for a small portion of this road. And so you can see that you have here, S being the curvilinear abscissa, you have something that is similar to the dynamics of the pendulum, but with a gravity field that is inclined. So this is an Hamiltonian system. And as tension does not depend on the curvilinear abscissa, it's this is an autonomous equation.
So S is the coordinate along the sheet.
Yes, coordinate along the sheet. So now you have seen that we have this system reproduce folds. It replicates folds. So we are led to study similarity in these systems. First, geometrical similarity, and then dynamical similarity. So, geometrical similarity. We would like to know the relationship between the first fold and the n-fold solution that we encounter. So, let us show that this n-fold solution with fold similar to this one are indeed a solution in these systems. For this, we get the first fold and we replicate it here. We then notice that we can juxtapose this solution and still get a solution of the system because it's an autonomous dynamical system. It's like letting a pendulum the time flow well above a period, simply. Then we use the fact that there is no scaling in this system, so we can zoom out this solution and recover the initial extent here of the box in which the sheet is enclosed, but we have then n folds with for a reduced height y to m. Yes, but this we can do also when we have a planar contact, for instance. Okay? There is a case where we could not do that, and I will tell you later.
Is the force the same in the
CD? No.
In BNC, no.
In BNC, let's see for the force just right now, dynamical similarity. So, in fact, you see that we have a similarity transformation here, where we reduce the height while keeping the angle of the tangent, the form, in fact. But we have, in fact, reduced the curvilinear abscissa by the same factor. So what does Elastica tells us about this? In fact, we can go back and see that Elastica is a second order in curvilinear abscissa. So reducing curvilinear abscissa by a factor is equivalent to increasing here the force by the factor square. Now we also notice that we have n folds, so the total force given by the sheet is has also to be multiplied by the number of folds, and so we get n to the power 3 here. So this dynamical similarity tells us that if Elastica is correct, then the scaling relationship in our system is this one. Divide the height by a factor m, you will increase the force by a factor n to the power 3.
Right, of course, in this case it's 0 anyway, so in this case the force would be 0.
Oh, no, but...
it's all intermediate case.
Yes, think about the planar case, yes.
As long as the symmetry is not broken.
Yes.
As long as,
as long as this reasoning is correct, you will have this scaling. So let us see. So to test it, we look for a collapse by plotting the f at the power n to minus 3 with respect to ny here. And you see that you have indeed a collapse here when you have linear context or flat context. But you don't have when we have freestanding fold here. So here the similarity is valid, here it is broken. We can understand why it is broken.
The freestanding fold was the one that had the pocket.
Yes.
It looks like this.
Yes. The problem here is that, as I said, there is only one standing fold. Well, here it is at the bottom, but one only on the whole sheet. And so that's not a similar situation. If we had a freestanding fold on each fold, that would be a similar situation, but this is not what we have because buckling occurs once for the flat part that is the most instable. So this is a reason why here we do not have this similarity. Rather, here we have a discrete scale invariance, discrete because m is, of course, an integer here. And you see that all the nonlinearity of the curve, of the response of the systems, is captured by this scaling here. This corresponds to all the previous data that I showed.
There's a range of heights in which you have the freestanding ones.
Yes. Yes. Just in. Yes, in between flat contacts and the other linear contact, you have this freestanding fold, and then similarity is broken. Discrete.
The whole series of states is the problem.
Yes. Yes, all the series of states.
Depends on height, though. I mean, for any given height, you have only one number, certain number of folds, right? There's no multiplicity in the solution.
No, but even when you have, let's say, here, four folds,
There
are many four-fold freestanding states.
Oh, because
you have, yeah. Yes. Here you... Maybe two of them are below the fold height.
It's always one.
Always one. Yes, there are only one freestanding fold on all the sheet. Okay, so I would like to make some comments about scale invariance here, this relationship with morphology. Think about springs here. I would not say that a spring would have any morphology because all these states are similar. So there is no large expression of shape in a spring. And so in this case, as all the states are similar, we will have continuous scale invariance. And the answer, the response of our system would be a power law here with, in fact, an exponent that is 1 for usual springs. Let us compare with sheets. Sheets show an evolution of form, so a morphology. Their states are not all similar. They are only similar when you relate them with discretely, in fact, so we have discrete scale invariants. And then you have seen that we have not a power law, in fact, and we can understand this because if we had a power law, as we have iterate vanishing of our force, then that would be contradiction. Our response would be zero. So it's quite normal not to have a power law here, but we have discrete scale invariance. Now you have seen that discrete scale invariance was broken in some states when we had freestanding fault. In fact, we can understand it. Discrete scale invariance cannot be complete, in fact. Just assume that you could relate y to y prime and y second here with any integers R and M here, and assume that at these three heights you will have similar states. Then you could take the relationship we have shown and obtain this relationship between these two height with R and M that would be integers, so here a rational. But as you know, rationals are dense, form a dense state, and so if this would appear, then F would be a power law. We know that it is not, so discrete scale invariance must broke not to have this relationship and not to write that. So in fact, the broken of scale invariance is implied by the structure of the problem. Okay, so now I would like to make a slight move toward the second situation where we have patterns exhibiting defects. And you have seen that we had some folds that were curved. They were curved in the plane of the sheet. But to move toward the situation, we'll study here the crushing between curved plates. So this fold will be curved in the opposite direction, but they will be curved nevertheless. And here, by looking to this situation, we will catch the essential thing, that is the existence now of a Gauss curvature, because we have a curvature on opposite on the two directions. And with a Gauss curvature, for which one curvature radius here is controlled, it's the curvature of our plate here. And it is a large-scale curvature. So it's apparently a slight modification of what we had previously until having a flat plate. We have just a curved plate curved on a large range.
Is it the upper or the lower plate?
Hmm?
Above, like this way.
Yes, it's just a crushing between cylinders.
Okay. With the equal curvature.
Yeah, equal curvature. Equal. Yes, here you see the plate without any crushing, but you see the effect of curvature. This plate is curved here, and so you see that some parts are in contact here, and here the other is not. So you see first a change. Well, this is the image of a grid here on the shape, just an image, to better see the geometry. Okay, so now we'll make the same thing, we'll crush our system, decrease the height, and view from above. So here, red is a light coming from this side, and blue from this side, so to better see the folds. So here, you see that we still have folds, but we have faults with defects here. They are no longer parallel, and they show defects. Okay, Let us decrease the height again. Okay, so I mentioned that these defects are in fact what we call D cones, that is cones that are developable. And in fact, these defects are here to localize the stretch. We have seen that now the sheet must be stretched somewhere. And in fact, in these states, it's preferable to localize the stretch in defects rather than having the stretch delocalized on all the sheet. Okay? So there are stretch in the core of defects, and otherwise there is only curvature.
At the sharp
points? Yes, yes, in this region. Yes, so high stress in this region, but a small region, and the balance of this is that
it is
better.
There's no grazing,
there's
no caustics, there's no, it doesn't bucket. I mean, it doesn't, like paper, you don't get grazing.
No, it's still in the linear regime of elasticity, still. Okay, so we continue to crush, so you have same thing, but with more defects now, okay? And so the number of defects increase. Let us continue to decrease the height, and just suddenly all the defects disappear. So that's counterintuitive. Usually when you crush, the number of defects increase. Here you crush and you encounter here an uncrumpling transition where the defects suddenly disappear. What's occurring? In fact, this shows that these defects were not plastics. This confirmed that they can disappear without showing where they were. And this shows that now the sheet prefer to delocalize the stretch on all the sheet. So can we understand this transition? In fact, for this, we'll make an estimate of elastic energy in regular states. In regular states, that I mean without defects. So the energy is the sum of a buckling energy and a stretch energy. Buckling energy, which is proportional to the sheet thickness at power 3. And proportional also to the mean curvature. The stretching energy is simply proportional to the sheet thickness and to something related to the Gauss curvature here. The mean curvature here for us is roughly given by the size of the folds, because this size is quite small compared to the curvature radius of the crushing plates. And the Gauss curvature is roughly this product of these two scales. But the inverse here of the Laplacians is mainly given by the small scales. So we have this estimation here, where L, R, the scale of the fold is simply the length of the sheet divided by the number of the folds.
Capital R is the radius of the surface?
Yes, that's the large curvature of our surface, which is quite large. It's about 30 centimeters, for instance, you see. So there is, well, at least a factor 10, but maybe 20, 30. So now we can, with this, estimate the ratio of the stretching energy to the buckling energy. We find this estimate here with the factor gamma, which is related here to the ratio of these lengths or to the number here of folds. So now let us call NC this number. Which is the number for which the factor gamma here equals 1. When n is lower than this number, then gamma is greater than 1, and the stretch energy, delocalized stretch energy, is larger than the Birkeland energy. So there, you see that it costs to delocalize stretch. It costs energy, and in fact, to minimize the total energy, it was localizing the stretch in defects. This is why here we expect defects. If this the number of fold is larger than this critical one, then we have the reverse situation. Stretching energy, delocalizing stretching does not cost much energy. So we can think that the minimum of the energy can be reached without defect and with delocalized stretch. So this is the reason why at this transition we have a change between a defect regime and a regular regime. Okay, so you see that this rough transition here scales with thickness at a power minus 1/2. So here, for various thickness of shield, we have looked for the transition number, and you see that that's okay.
Could you remind us, H must be something with elastic parameters of the material?
What is H? H is the thin, the sheet thickness. It's the thickness of the sheet.
So there's nothing in there that characterizes the elastic constants of
no,
the material?
No, not at all. That's right. That's right. It's only geometrical here. Okay. Well, this is because here we are comparing these two energy, and the elastic constants are here, so they cancel in this comparison. Now you will tell me, well, what's the? How can we understand that when we crush a sheet of paper, the more we crush, the more defect we have? Well, that's simply because...
So that's a good test of whether your system is elastic or not. If you use now stainless, if you take plastic and stainless steel,
yes,
and you get the same curve, and they lie on top of each other, that means everything was linear.
Yes.
If you don't lie on top of each other, then you're in trouble.
It's yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes.
With paper, you have irreversible creases. With paper, you have irreversible creases.
Yes, yes, that's it. So, imagine that we make this, the same thing at three dimension, in fact, because this is the main difference. Here, we have crushed in two dimension on a curved plate, but if we curve on three dimension, then all the size will reduce. Here, you have some size that did not reduce. This is why you still have here a large R here. But assume that we crush in three dimension, then we'll have this size here, which also reduce as the fold size. And if you take the same scaling, but with now this big difference, you will see that the critical number of folds will be equal to the length of the sheet divided by its thickness, so quite large. And that would mean that the critical size of your folds at which you could expect a regularization is of the order of the sheet thickness. But here, you escape the regime of linear elasticity, as you know, so this would not work. So it's compatible with what we know about crushing in three dimensions. Okay, so now a question would be, what about the mechanical response of the sheet in these states? So this is still under study, and this shows an interesting difference with the case of crushing between parallel plates. Now, the last topics that I would like to show here is thin field film delamination. Well, in industry, there are many purposes in which it is interesting to deposit a film on a substrate to obtain some protection regarding mechanics, chemical protection or thermal protection. And usually this is obtained by depositing vapor at high temperature, but your device must work at a much lower temperature, so you have differential contraction, and this can yield a delamination here of your film. So here you see delamination patterns that occurs at small scales. You see 20 microns here. This also is in microns.
Is that where it's pulled away from the surface?
Yes. Uh-huh. It's pulled away. So usually that makes the system not work or, you know. Okay, so here you see that we have some blisters that are straight. Here they begin to undulate. Here you have some worms, in fact, that some bumps that appear. And here you have, well, it's the same, but with many blisters here, which is called in a telephone cord pattern here. So can we understand these patterns? In fact, here this pattern is reversible, for instance, but these ones are not. So it may be interesting at least to manage, to monitor the systems to be in one state rather than in another.
Greater than the substrate, so it just stretches.
Yes, but the attachments may not be enough sometimes, and it is in these circumstances when you have a fracture, then you can have a delamination and formation of a blister. Okay, so delamination is fracture plus blister. Okay, and the fracture enables the blister to propagate. Yes, it's a well, it's a kind of fracture, in fact,
no,
between.
I was saying, well, now you talked about situations
where
elasticity
is limited. Yes. 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 Okay, but, well, one issue is, for instance, to know whether the blister shape that I've shown is dynamically generated by the, well, fracture, or by the overall stress field. What makes these patterns? Here, we are investigating the second assumption, the second guess. And for this, we shall make a modelization, a macroscopic modelization. That's something interesting in elasticity. You can deal with small scales by working at large scales. So we will consider a yet formed blister in a prescribed stress field. So we evacuate this problem here. We only consider a blister that is made here. This is a sheet that is claimed on these sides here. And we impose to this sheet a stress field in two directions. How can we do that? In fact, here you recover the sheet. It's here. The main difficulty here is to enable contraction in this direction, but also in this one. And in this one, this is the clamping direction, so we must also contract the clamping device. This is obtained by putting this clamping device on a much larger plate here that is in fact contracted along these two sides. So this contraction will be transposed to our sheet and contracted in two directions. Yes.
Huge force.
Yes, but human force, in fact. But yes, huge force. All right? So let us observe the patterns that we have obtained depending on the stress field. So we make here the reflection of an image of a grid onto our sheet. So here you have a planar sheet here because you see you recover a regular regular grid. You can show the estimate the irregularities here, but they are quite difficult. It's quite difficult to get something better here. Then here you have an alert column. You can see this because you have on this direction you can see only two lines. So your sheet, in fact, has bumped, has buckled, like that. So this is what is called an alert column. It's a
simple.
Yes, that's it. That's it. So the sheet has buckled like that. Okay. Like that. Now you add sheet on the other direction also, and so you see this pattern: some bumps here, some worms, and some what we call oblique worms here. So here is the stability diagram because we can interpret this as a secondary instability of the alert column. And so this is the stability diagram where you see the two components of the stress here. So here is the alert column, here the planar sheet, so the transition from planar to the alert column, the buckling of the plane, in fact, to the alert column. Here the bumps, the oblique worms, and the worms here. Here this gray region here show metastability. In this region we could have either oblique worms or worms.
What are those regions? Well, on the bottom towards the right where there are no symbols.
Yeah. Well, this is because we could not reach these states because of the Poisson ratio of the tensorial nature of elasticity. When you when we act in a direction, there is another action on the other. So this is why this is inclined. To reach this state, we have to pull the system, and that was not a yes, that's correct. Yes, that's correct. But in fact, all is absorbed here in this particular value of the stress field, which is the stress field at which the alert columns arise. So all these dimensions are contained here. So to model these systems, then we have an equation, but it's an approach equation. It's the Foppel von Karman equations, which are valid when this size, which is the departure of the sheet from the plane, is not too large, and when the curvature also is not too large. So here is these equations that are standard in elasticity. Here we have added these, in fact, these terms, which tell us that we have imposed some stress in our systems, and what we have, we have looked for the energy given by these Foppel von Karman equations when we make a Galerkin analysis that is enabled to recover the patterns that we have seen experimentally. So we put this particular shape in this equation and look for the minimum of energy. We obtain.
Why do they call it the perfect common equation?
Well, they call that?
Yeah.
I assume because these guys have derived these equations, no?
It was. Pepper was the teacher of Mantle, and Mantle was the teacher of von Karman.
Okay, so why not Prandtl
in this story? Prandtl worked on the Bartle beam. One of his early projects in 1905 or so, for some technical, he wanted to do technical physics. And so he worked on this Bartle beam, and Karman was his greatest student, so he had to do that. I wonder why it's called after the
grandfather. Yes, yes. Why the grandfather and the son are connected here. Okay, so this is theory. So the states of lowest energy. So you recover the column, the bands, the oblique bands, the worms, the gray region, which stands for metastability here, and you see that more or less we have an agreement with experiments regarding this. This instability diagram. So that tells us that in fact we can understand delamination patterns by just looking to the pattern exhibited by a compressed blister. So certainly when looking to the patterns I shown initially, we could, from this form, know what were the stress on these blisters.
Two axes, are they stress in horizontal and vertical directions? Stresses in the two?
It's the same scales here.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I'm just wondering what physically the two axes, one is, or is
yes.
X
yes.
stress and the other?
Yes,
it's they seem to have the same symbols, but.
Yes, this is this is the small direction. Well, it's the direction of the picture. Here, x is the small direction, and y is the large direction.
Okay.
Of the sheet.
Okay.
It's relative to the sheet. Yes, to the axis of the sheet.
So in some sense, this is not too surprising because it's exactly the same situation, right? And you have the system clamped, which is how far it delaminated. And then
yes.
you can match it, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
the question is, why doesn't it delaminate further?
Well, here
because you know the stress. Now you know the stress.
Yes, here it can't. Yes, we know the stress.
So just looking at the pattern, you
yes,
can
just
the stresses.
Yes, and you see something interesting is that usually you have isotropic stress, so you can see on these lines what's going on, and you can realize that you will. Obtain worms here instead of other column. And so this is what is seen experimentally. So this proposition, because to modelize exactly what is going on experimentally, we would have to incorporate the fracture mechanism that is responsible for delamination. But this shows that decorrelating the...
So when these things fracture, they actually send out a nucleation, so there's really a fracture tip, or do they globally delaminate? No, there's probably a local delamination, right?
Yes, mainly,
front,
mainly,
so
yes.
Some type of front.
Yes, mainly. It's propagation. Okay, so now my conclusion. So I've tried to show that that constraint sheets can exhibit a rich variety of extended folded forms with large nonlinear mechanical response, but this nonlinearity is related to geometry, to patterns, and not to elasticity itself, which is still in the linear regime. So I recall that the features of this folding pattern may be important regarding robustness, transfer functions. For robustness, we have shown a mechanical example just now. So this is a challenging example of pattern formation, which may have widespread application at many scales. But these patterns are hardly understandable from elasticity equation. I have shown two examples, but the second one is more difficult to address. So there is room for pattern formation modeling in these systems, in the light of what we would have been done when one didn't knew exactly the equation, or when the equations of the systems were too hard to manage. Well, thank you. Yes, well, it's beyond what we can do actually. We are moving toward explaining this, but we didn't. So we.
And taking the way in which this uniform stress would be to take, say, a rubber ball and clamp it around the ring, and then try to flatten it.
Yes.
And then you would start off with uniform stress in a specific region.
Yes, yes. Yes, but it's quite hard to clamp a sheet on a circular region. Okay. Yes, with that, yes, that would be okay. Yes, and that would be interesting. Yes. Presumably, we'll get target patterns, but maybe with instabilities, as it's well known.
Okay. Any more questions?
No, we don't have Peter today.
Peter's not here. Well, if there are no questions, let's thank Ella for the wonderful talk. And I guess this was the last talk the program. I wish you all an active week until Friday, and then a good trip home. Thank you.
Yeah.